Three, two, one. And I'm really not sure how to start out. Okay. I'll try it again though. Three, two, one. Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Therapy and Theology Podcast. I am TC Long, and I'm here with my co-host, Eric Johnson, PhD.
Hi. Piled higher and deeper.
So, after taking a break, we have decided to get back into podcasting and talking about mental health topics, mental health issues, and how we can approach those in light of our faith, and not just from a one faith perspective, but from both a Latter-day Saint and a Roman Catholic perspective. So today we decided what we wanted to discuss was to talk about mental health in general. But four components of mental health that we wanted to address today is we wanted to talk about the importance of sleep, the importance of exercise, meditation, and spirituality in dealing with mental health issues. Because these are things that can be applied not just to any one mental health issue, but these are things that will benefit people who are dealing with depression or anxiety or stress or anger. You know, these are concepts that will help, you know, across the board in improving mental health for people.
I totally agree. Absolutely. So let's hit sleep first, man.
Okay.
Sleep's a big one. You know, especially with teenagers. I keep getting these teenagers coming in my office, and they're like, man, I'm so depressed, or I'm so anxious. And I'm like, how much sleep are you getting? Well, I'm getting about 5 hours of sleep on a good day. Oh, that might have something to do with it.
Yeah.
And they don't believe me. A lot of teenagers don't believe me. A lot of adults don't believe me how much sleep can impact you.
Yeah,
but when you take these studies that just study sleep alone by itself without any other factors, and you take a healthy person and you sleep deprive them for a period of time, then they go crazy, mm-hmm. go nuts. They develop depression, anxiety, they can get hallucinations, all kinds of bad stuff going on when you don't get enough sleep. It's not good. No. And sleep deficits are cumulative too, because people don't know that. It accumulates over time. And so that if you lose 1 hour every day after a month, well, you've lost a lot, and it's really going to mess with you. So sleep is very important, and a difference for everybody. Some people need 8 hours. Some people need 10 hours. You got to really listen to your body and just accept that you need it. That's my feelings about it. Yeah. What have you seen about sleep?
Well, I've kind of been noticing the same thing. Either kids will come in and they've either, you know, they're staying up until 2-3 in the morning and then getting up at 6 to get ready for school, or they are, you know, having the opposite problem, where they'll, you know, they go to school, and then when they come home at 4 or 5, they'll eat and then crash and then sleep through the rest of the night. So they're getting like 12 hours of sleep. But I mean, I had a question about the sleep deprivation or the sleep deficit thing that you had mentioned.
Yeah.
You talked about how it was cumulative, and so like at the end of a month, if you're losing a 1 hour of sleep every month, or 1 hour of sleep every night for a month, then then you've got a 30-hour deficit. Is that something that you can make up? Is that something
you
can
get back?
How does somebody do that?
Oh, they get more sleep. And then it goes away.
I mean, can you just take a weekend and sleep for, 12 hours each night over a weekend and kind of make it up? Or
You don't want to, you can get, so here's a problem with doing that, right? Like some people try to do that. They just go and people survive that way, especially single moms that, they're working odd hours and they got no choice but to make it up on the weekend. So they survive, but they don't survive very well. So the problem is that we all have a circadian rhythm, and the circadian rhythm usually, it goes in this like ebb and flow cycle. So you wake up like, if you wake up every day at 6, usually there's a slow, steady growth where you build up energy throughout the morning, and then it peaks and it starts to go down. And then around 2 o'clock, it hits the lowest point, and then it slowly starts to go up again where you build more energy, and then that energy peaks, and then it goes down and it crashes again around 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. And that's just the rhythm that the body gets used to. It's called circadian rhythm. And that's really hard to develop and really hard to maintain. When you establish it, you have to get on the same rhythm, and you have to maintain that rhythm for some people. It takes months to get that established, and the circadian rhythm can vary. It can take a little bit of variance in your sleep schedule, but no more than an hour. So if you are have one sleep schedule during the weekend and a different one during the week, then you're going to experience what a lot of people experience, is that they lay down and their mind's racing and they just can't sleep. And they can't figure out, like, how come my sleep is erratic? Sometimes I'm sleepy at 12. Sometimes I'm sleepy at 1. I can't, just lay down and sleep like I used to do when I was a kid. Well, you can't, because you've really messed up your circadian rhythm, which is the same thing like we experienced when we're on jet lag,
Sure.
Yeah, it takes a while to reset it. And so, yeah, you can make it up, but it's going to suck. Because you're going to mess up your circadian rhythm all the time.
But it sounds like, establishing a routine is kind of the goal.
Yeah, it definitely is the goal to get good sleep.
Right, if you're wanting to get that circadian rhythm like in sync and get to where, you're getting restful sleep and feeling refreshed when you wake up, you're not going to be able to do that if the sleeping pattern is, if your sleeping routine is so out of whack that your body can't tell what rhythm it's supposed to follow.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I think I definitely agree with you.
Okay.
You know what else I think? I think that things like anxiety and depression, they're really affected by energy. I noticed that if I've got low energy, mm-hmm. then it really mimics depression in that my body wants to conserve the energy, and as it conserves the energy, I withdraw from talking to people, I withdraw from associating from people, because that takes a lot of energy. And I also withdraw from doing activities that are fun. Because initially when you're doing these fun activities, you get the payout at the end or halfway through it, working up toward going somewhere or working up toward getting out of the house or working up toward, like, all that takes energy. So the least energy you have, the more you kind of withdraw from people, the more you withdraw from things that you would previously enjoy.
Yeah.
And that's going to lead you down depression.
Definitely.
And I also noticed that when the body is really deprived of energy, then the mind wants to help out by looking at the problems that are coming down the road and trying to solve them ahead of time, because the mind's like, hey, these problems are going to hit you. Let's focus really hard on them so we can try to solve them before they come and deplete more energy. Only the problem with that is now you're focused on problems, not only in the immediate, but far down the road. And it's almost like the opposite. Like, if I have lots of energy, my mind is focused on the problems that are in front of me, and it tells me that those problems are doable and not big. But when I have zero energy, any problem, even the little ones, look impossible, because my body's like, hey, you really don't have the energy to wash those dishes right now.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make them seem huge. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's another thing that, you know, sleep deprives us of. So, you know, there's this chemical in the brain, and I'm going to pronounce it wrong, called adenosine, and it accumulates right there in the brainstem every time throughout the day as we're awake, and it only disappears when we get enough sleep. But if we're sleep deprived and we're not getting enough sleep, that accumulation doesn't go away 100%, and that causes all that stuff, all those mental health disorders. It influences those. You know, it's not like 100%, but there's definitely studies showing that it's got a big correlation with mental health disorders.
So the more it is a big contributor to mental health issues.
Yeah. Yeah. Sleep is
huge. That makes sense. Well, going along with that, the energy level thing, exercise also fits right into that too.
Yes, it sure does, man.
You know, I've heard people say that that, you know, they don't have enough energy to exercise. You know, I'm too tired because I'm sleep deprived. I can't wake up an hour earlier, you know, to exercise, because then I'm missing out on that hour of sleep. And I get that. I understand that, and I struggle with that. But I've also heard other people say that, you know, you don't have enough energy to not exercise. In other words, if you, you know, in order to increase your energy, you've got to get into the habit of expending that energy and, you know, moving your body and getting that energy level going.
Amen to that. I remember texting you last year, and I was like, it was I don't know what I was doing. Something wrong in my life. I'd gotten out of the habit of exercising, and I was just so drained. And I knew every time I woke up, I should exercise, but I wasn't going to do it because I just didn't feel like it, right? Because my body's like, don't go run a mile. You have no energy. I'm going to make that look impossible so you don't go expend the energy on that treadmill. Then I remember texting you because I made myself do it, and I was like, TC, I got my energy back, man. I feel like I take on the road. And it didn't happen until after I ran on the treadmill, and then immediately I felt better, just immediately. And I always wonder, why in the world do I wait so long to get back on my routine, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
But at the time, it sure looks impossible.
It does. And every time, it seems like such a chore. And to be honest, this week, Angela and I started getting back onto a fully committed exercise routine, to the point where we're actually keeping a log on our fridge, and we write down every day what exercises we do. We're like trying to be real serious about this and hold each other accountable, but also encourage each other. And this week, I've been doing a lot of squats. My hamstrings, mm-hmm. my quads, hate me. And I've been, I feel like I've been walking bow-legged all week because my legs are so sore from exercising. And every morning when I wake up, I do not want to exercise. I, you know, have this mental war with myself about exercising. And, but I end up doing it anyway. I feel great. I mean, I feel so much better than I did before exercising. So even though I don't want to, or even though, you know, nobody ever feels like, you know, oh, I can't wait to go exercise. Some people I'm sure do. They get into that, but a majority of us that struggle with weight issues and things like that, exercising is hard, and we don't look forward to doing it. But you know, I can guarantee you that if you can push through it and get it done, you know, you're going to always feel, you know, 100 times better afterward.
Now, what it's curious, what was, let's say you wake up in the morning and you're looking at your day and you're thinking of your schedule. What's the difference between the way you're looking at your schedule before you exercise and the way you look at your schedule after you exercise, as in terms of doability?
Like the whole schedule or the exercise schedule?
Like the whole schedule you're going to do that day when you wake up and you're like, here's the doability of this day before versus the doability after.
Yeah, before, you know, when I look at my schedule, everything just seems daunting. There's like all these clients I've got to see during the day. Then there's all this paperwork that has to be done during the day. And then reports that have to be sent in to different places. And, you know, it just feels like, oh, it's another day. It's the daily grind. And it weighs on you. But after exercising, there's already this intense sense of accomplishment from completing the exercises that, you know, the rest of the day seems like it's going to be, you know, a piece of cake.
So one of the things that I like to do for people with depression, anxiety, actually anything with mental health, but depression is the hardest one for the people. And I like to have them set a schedule and force themselves to do exercise. And they say it's like climbing Mount Everest in mud. Like, it is the hardest thing in the world when you're in deep, dark depression to push yourself to move. Mm-hmm. But they also come back and tell me that's the number one thing that has helped them throughout the week was the exercise. And even if it was just walking the dog.
It is like extremely effective, you know, to the point where I almost want to tell clients, you know, don't come to me for therapy, go to the gym and get a trainer, you know, and you'll, you know, get out of your depression much, much faster that way. Than just sitting in here and talking to me, because we can talk about, you know, the where your depression has come from, and we can talk about those issues, and we can work on ways of resolving it. But you know, if you're not meeting it head on and doing things to actively, you know, improve your physical health and increase your, you know, endorphins and dopamine and those things, then the depression is just going to keep sticking around. I guess the thing that I like about exercise too is that it kind of helps to, you know, get you out of your head. You're focused on, you know, trying to push yourself through, you know, the next mile on the bike or treadmill, or the next walk around the block, or the next set of weights.
It is fun, man. Well, it's fun after the fact. When you look back and you're like, I did that.
Great afterward.
Yeah, during and before sucks. Well, at least for me. Some people love it. But if I don't have like a good podcast I'm listening to, I'm bored out of my mind.
Now, I'm listening to some podcasts of guys that do intense workouts, And that's what they say, is that they, you know, they love doing it. So they get excited about the challenge. They get excited about, you know, the weight that they're going to do. But, man, I'm not there yet.
So, meditation.
Yep, that's the next on our list.
That's huge. That was so hard for me. So hard. So, here's a plug. We first time I tried that. Well, no, probably not the first time. One of the times I tried it, got this little home biofeedback machines. Cause you know, you can get those kind that hook to your computer, clip on your earlobe. Yeah.
Now they have ones you can wear on your head, and they like measure your, they're supposed to measure your brain waves or something like that.
Yeah, those are awesome. So I got me an M Wave from Heart Math. You're welcome, M Wave. There's your plug. And it was amazing. I love that thing. But I tell you what, it was awful, because the first time I hooked that thing on and I tried to meditate, that M Wave was telling me that I was stressed at 100% max. Mm-hmm. And I kept it on for an hour, and I'm like, meditating, doing all this deep breathing stuff.
Serenity now.
Yeah, I'm like, Serenity. I paid a lot of money for this thing, and it's not working. I'm so mad. My wife walks in, because my wife's a chill person. She sticks that thing on her ear, and instantly it goes to calm. Like, red, ding, 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 the green thing pops up. It goes, you are in your zone. And I'm like, what? It turns out I can suck at this. So it took me months and months of intense practice to be able to teach my body to relax. And I had no idea. I thought it was like akin to somebody getting in a car wreck and learning how to walk again. You know, it was so difficult. And I think that's the gem of meditation, because when you can learn to turn your mind off and relax, it is so useful. So the next thing I had to learn was to turn my mind off. So I got to where I could relax my body, right?
Yeah.
But turning my mind off was hard, especially making it go blank or not engaging the thoughts as they're drifting by. So hard. I must have practiced 1 hour every day. Luckily, I had a long car ride. and it still took months.
Wait. You practiced meditation while you were driving?
Yeah, it's probably not safe, right?
No.
Arrested somehow.
Ladies and gentlemen, please do not meditate or listen to meditation tapes while you're driving.
Yeah, right. They usually say that at the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Please do not listen to this tape as you were driving down the road. But, yeah, it was
hard.
But
that does not apply to Eric Johnson.
No, because I'm going to get in a wreck. This is not. If you've seen my car, you know it's true. And it is such a useful tool. So a guy was in my office the other day, and he says, you know, you're asking me to meditate, but do you do it? And I started thinking, and I'm like, yeah, I do it all the time, because it has become like a necessary tool now in my life. Mm-hmm. So if I'm lying in bed and my mind is spinning and I can't go to sleep, well, I just practice my meditation, turn my mind off, and next thing I know, I'm waking up the next day. Or if I'm sitting there in front of a group of people and they start fighting and my adrenaline starts pumping, turn my mind off, and within a couple of minutes, boom, I'm able to communicate without freaking out. Oh, and especially for like social anxiety or imposter syndrome, when I feel like I'm inadequate in the situation, if I turn my mind off, I can re-engage. So man, it has been such a useful tool. And my favorite, my all-time favorite time to use meditation is when I'm praying. I set my time every day after air exercise, go outside, and I'll set my timer, and I'll just meditate, and I'll start communication with God. And it is so amazing, because when your mind is still, and the reason for the timer is because if I don't have the timer, then I'm like, what time is it? What time is it? Do I need to go to work now?
That's a good idea.
Yeah. So if I set my timer and I know I don't have to pay attention to time, mm-hmm. I don't have to pay attention to anything. It's just me and God. And I start my prayer and I start praying and I wait and I listen and I feel the impressions without rushing to any conclusions. And then it's like this conduit opens up and you can just feel God's presence and you can feel what God wants for you for in your life that day. And it's amazing. So, so many applications.
Yep, I agree. I actually need to work on meditating more. That's going to be one of my next steps. Once I get the exercising routine down, then my next goal is to work on the prayer and meditation.
Yeah, man, so. I love that. And it, why is it that everything good is hard to maintain?
Because it's work.
Yeah,
I mean there are a lot of apps that people use to do meditation or to do mindfulness. Headspace is one, Calm is another one, but there's probably hundreds more, and those are really good. Those are really helpful. The problem that I get into with apps is that I'm more focused on the app than I am on what I'm supposed to be doing. And so it's like my mind doesn't shut off or slow down because it's just like, okay, is it loud enough? Do I have it running correctly, or am I messing something up, or did I accidentally pay for something that I wasn't supposed to pay for, or so it kind of makes things a little bit worse for me. So I try to avoid apps. But unless there's one like a meditation app that helps you to kind of shut your brain down, and when you press start on the app, it turns your phone off.
Oh, that's a great idea. I like, so the very, very, very first time I even tried meditation thing, it was a class in college on hypnosis, and the professor put a candle out and said to concentrate on that candle. And it was helpful because if I focus 100% on that candle, then I wasn't focused on the thoughts in my head. Mm-hmm. And it was a break from my thoughts. And a 15-20 minute break from your thoughts every day is so amazingly relaxing, and it sets the tone for the rest of the day.
In the Catholic Church, one of the things that we have is called Eucharistic adoration, and it's where they place the host inside of a monstrance. It's just like a display case, and they set it out, and people can just kind of sit in the presence of the Blessed Sacrament and focus on that. Which we believe is the body of Christ. So, some places have perpetual adoration. So they have the Blessed Sacrament exposed 24 hours a day, and there's always somebody in there, who's committed to an hour or 2 hours of just being present there. And so whenever I go into adoration, I'll sit there and I'll kind of do the same thing where, I know I'm going to be there for an hour. So I'm not really paying attention to time, at least not initially. And, so I would just focus on the Blessed Sacrament and just kind of allow myself to be in the presence of Jesus Christ and let, all the stress and all the frustration and tension from the day just kind of, fade away. And I'll be sitting there and I'll be praying and I'll be, listening and just enjoying the peace and quiet. And I'm just like, oh man, okay, it's got to be like, it's got to be at least like 45 minutes. I better check the time and make sure that, that I'm not running over. And I'll check my watch and it's only been 10 minutes. And it's just weird how when we're in such a busy state, you know, constantly going, it seems like we never have enough time. But then when we slow down and we're able to clear our minds and just take time out just to turn our heads off and just be quiet and be still and be silent, it's like that time just expands and we're able to, you know, relax for 10 minutes, but it feels like we've relaxed for an hour.
Yep. I totally agree. Yeah. Yep. The faster our mind races, the more our anxiety goes up and the more everything feels immediate. Mm-hmm. And the slower our mind goes, the more everything feels nice and smooth.
Yeah.
This one person was in my office the other day and, the person had an amazing business going, just amazing. They had started it themselves, and it was up and running, and they were busy. But the problem was everything was overwhelming, and everything seemed to have to be solved immediate. So the person's solution was that as soon as the feeling of immediacy hit them, they would stop, meditate, wait for their mind to rest, and then go back to work. And they would do this multiple times a day. And what they found was they wouldn't put out fires and they wouldn't jump from thing to thing, because starting new tasks and jumping from task to task takes a lot longer than focusing on one at a time. And they didn't feel like they couldn't get it done anymore. It didn't feel impossible because their mind was clear and not in a hurry. And it made all the tasks seem not in a hurry. And I thought it was a really good solution. Probably why that person's rich, you know. They figure stuff out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Meditation is the bomb. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs to do it. So HeartMath recommends that you do it 15 minutes a day. I think that's a good idea, especially yeah. right before bed. Oh, snap. There's something else meditation does. So some people can go to sleep, but then they wake up multiple times during the night, just wake up. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes if you meditate before bed, and your mind is in this relaxed state prior to bed, then the waking up during the night lessens and sometimes goes away altogether. It is when you go to sleep with a rushed, a hurried, frantic mind that you're waking up multiple times a night.
So, that's nice to know.
Cool.
Very nice. Okay, so we've talked about sleep. We've talked about exercise. We've talked about meditation. Now the last thing we wanted to talk about was spirituality and the role that it plays in dealing with mental health. Now, we've mentioned some, we've talked about some aspects of spirituality in relation to meditation. But what are some other aspects of it that you feel like spirituality has a key role in improving mental health?
A lot, huh? Yeah, a lot. You know, I think one thing is, so I met a guy, he was pretty cool. I like him a lot. And he was telling me how he was in a war, and he had watched his buddy's face get blown off and die in front of him.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah. And he said, after that, compared to watching that, everything else seemed very unimportant. So he would something bad would happen in his life, and his mind would automatically just say, you know what? Compared to this, it's going to be okay. And he would stay pretty chill about a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I think religion has the ability to put things in an eternal perspective, which makes our immediate concerns kind of puts them in their place. Like, yeah, our electricity got cut off, but in the eternal perspective, we're going to get it turned on soon, and it's really not going to influence us very much. It's not a big impact. You know?
Yeah.
Or my wife didn't wash the dishes when it was her turn. Well, not a big deal in the eternal. If you look at like the eternal thing of, you know, eternity, the span of eternity and what really matters, you know, being with your family and having that close relationship and that nice bond and spending time together, those dishes are such a minutia, like they don't even like have a spot in the expanse of time and spiritual life, like an eternal existence. Yeah, it just puts things in perspective.
I think so too. There's spirituality also seems to bring with it a sense of hope. And that is something that people who struggle with depression struggle with a lot, is that feeling of, you know, their life just is, feels hopeless, that there is no hope in their life. but people who have an active spirituality tend to report that they feel more hopeful about things, and they approach situations with a stronger sense of hope than they would if they didn't have, you know, their faith or their spirituality. And it reminds me of Viktor Frankl.
Yeah, he's the bomb. You know,
he was a psychiatrist in, was it Austria? Or was it in Germany?
I don't know. I know he went to a concentration camp.
Yeah, I think he actually went to Auschwitz and was there with several people. He survived it and wrote a book about it called Man's Search for Meaning. So it's definitely a good book for people to read. But he talks about, you know, this whole thing, that he would see the people in the concentration camps who would die were usually the people who had given up on all hope, and they didn't have anything to hold on to. The ones who did survive the concentration camps were the ones who had that sense of hope, and, you know, had something to basically live for. And so that's what he basically boiled things down to, was, so now you don't have to read the book. Yeah, you do. I still think it's a good book to read. But hope plays a big part of dealing with depression, and spirituality is one of those things that can help instill a deeper sense of hope. In fact, I recently had a client who had been away from church for a long time, and they had experienced some trauma, and they ended up going back to church, and within the span of about 4 weeks, they had gone from being, you know, suicidally depressed to being, you know, much happier. Not that they were completely cured of their depression, but they were in a state where they felt like their life had meaning again, and they felt like their life had purpose again. And it was like a total 180 in just a matter of a few weeks.
That's beautiful. You know, I also like the fact that I also like that religion is an action. It's where you go out and you do God's work, you know, you serve others, you're kind to others, you're actively looking outside yourself So the worst thing that somebody with a mental health disorder can do is to sit down inside the house alone and think about their problems, or think about how hard their life is, or think about how people have injured them. And getting outside yourself and looking for ways to serve others is amazing, especially in a family. If you are spending your time looking for ways to show your spouse love, you're not spending your time thinking about how you're doing more or how much they're failing you. And the more you serve somebody, the more you're kind to somebody, the more love you feel. Everybody's like, I don't know if I can ever love my spouse again. I like them, but I don't love them. I'm not in love with them. Well, go do some nice things for them. Go serve them. Go be kind to them.
Yeah.
And that love's going to grow. People think that in order for them to be in love again, they got to wait for their spouse to do nice things to them. But you start doing nice things to your spouse, and you're going to start to be in love again.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
And that's called loving your spouse, not feeling love or being in love, but actually the verb tense of love. You're loving your spouse by doing things for them. That's the only way to keep that feeling of love going.
Yeah, absolutely. Same being close to your kids, right? If you want to be close to your kids, you go do something nice to them. Spend time with them.
Yep. All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up. I've got to move along, and it sounds like your dog needs to go outside.
Is that my dog? I thought that was your dog.
No.
Wow, that's my dog. Yeah.
At least I think it's...
to go outside. Maybe it's my neighbor's dog.
No. At least I hope it's your dog. I don't think it's ours, but
yeah.
If anybody, if you guys have questions about mental health issues or any of the things that we talked about in this episode, feel free to email us. My email address is tc@tclongcounseling.com. Eric, what's your email address?
You can find my email address at my website. It's ericjohnsonphd.com. And if you just go there, my contact information is on the website.
Yeah. And you could also go to tclongcounseling.com, which is my website. I've got contact forms and stuff there too. But we would love to hear from you. Let us know what you think about the podcast, think ways that we can improve it. We're still pretty new to this. But we want it to be a good resource for people out there who are struggling with mental health issues, especially if you're Catholic or if you're a Latter-day Saint and looking for faith-based assistance with your mental health issues. We would love to hear from you.
All right. See y'all later.
Okay. Have a good evening.
You too, man.